Podcast 005, May 2006.
To tie around his head, I say. years will do. And then he said, Polly, when you come to.
Welcome to Folkcast, the best podcast there is covering folk, folk rock, singer-songwriter and roots-based music. We're coming to you from sunny Preston in the United Kingdom. I'm Phil Widows.
And I'm Ken Nicol.
That was Philip G. Martin's take on Summer Is A-Coming In, the traditional English welcome to the month of May, and one of the very oldest recorded folk songs. That was followed by Rosemary Lane, a brand new take on a traditional song which comes from hot new duo Puma Jaw, and is featured on their new album, Becoming Puma Jaw, which is released towards the end of this month.
And that mix of old and new is something of a theme on this month's show. We're mixing the old with the new. We're looking at the traditions of May and hearing from Steve Knightley and Phil Beer, collectively known as the Mighty Show of Hands.
And they're both old and new. And with no more ado, let's open the Folkcast Folk Dates Diary. It is written that scarecrows all call him Governor.
Others claim that he's on first-name terms with the Green Man.
We just know him as Baba.
Thank you. Hello there. Baba here with another month drawn from the folk calendar of the British Isles. I hope you enjoyed your May Day celebrations, but if you'd like to know more about traditional events at this most important time of the folk year in preparation for next May, well then listen carefully. The start of May is perhaps the most celebrated part of the folk year, still widely observed across Britain, with a growing level of festivity in recent years. May Day venerates the season's fertility and the promise of a harvest bounty to come. It's a time of renewal, as evidenced by the tradition of dew gathering celebrated in the verse, "The fair maid who on the 1st of May goes to the fields at break of day and washes in dew from the hawthorn tree will ever after handsome be." This day was, as the verse says, a day of collecting hawthorn, perceived to be lucky and to warn off winter's evil spirits. The same is also true of Rowan. Beltane aspects continued on this day, with May garlands being woven, sometimes even with secret May dolls inside, continuing an informal sense of pre-Christian deity adoration. Wells are often garlanded on this day as a sanctified place. The main form of festivity is often through communal May Day parades, led by a town mayor, or originally, the full king for a day, the Lord of Misrule. These parades are recorded from medieval times, notable, for example, in London, where milkmaids would parade their silverware on their heads and chimney sweeps would march. Over time, the Jack in the Green garlanded figure emerged during the Victorian era as a key inclusion. There's even a popular Jack in the Green festival in Hastings, with Morris men, a Jack Awakening hilltop dance, parades and folk song. Rochester also continues a similar festival, the Sweeps Festival. A delightfully preserved part of May Day is that of animal guising, with men in canvas and ribbon-covered hobby horses topped with carved heads in Minehead in Somerset and Padstow in Cornwall. These often fearsome creatures parade through the towns, snapping at the people and, in old times, taking women inside the expansive structures for a symbolic fertilising. In Minehead, there's an additional ritual known as booting, where volunteering women are held down and touched 10 times with the hobby horse's head, after which they dance together. But however strange this might seem, the obios at Padstow is something again. After singing the Padstow May song in the early hours and collecting greenery, the blue ribbon os walks the town at 10 and the traditional red ribbon os at 11. The red os is the main one, travelling through the town, taunted by a teaser with a stick. Occasionally, it symbolically dies and is revived by a St George-related local song. Later, after much town festivity that surely influenced the classic British film The Wicker Man, there is much song singing and drinking until summer is most definitely a-coming in. And later on, at 6 o'clock, the two obiosses dance through the town from opposite ends, meeting up in the middle where a maypole has been set up and everyone dances round the maypole. Local communal celebrations continue in a mixture of spring fetes, Morris dance and maypole raising and dancing. With the twirled ribbons wrapped around it, the maypole is a key feature of the day, but dancing around it is a relatively modern invention of the Victorian era. There's also the wonderful crowning of May Queens, young teenage girls from the local community. May Day carries on the themes of renewal, fertility and social liberation, and perhaps provides the central form of communal binding for the year ahead. The 2nd of May, and throughout this week, was the time for hiring fairs, with craftsmen and those seeking employment over the spring to autumn season parading for selection by the employers of the time. Knighton and Powys still holds one, though more for celebration, on May the 23rd. Now, to come back to forthcoming dates this month. On the first Sunday in May, the Randwick WAP takes place near Stroud in Gloucestershire, where two huge cheeses, usually double Gloucester, are blessed, then rolled around the church 3 times anti-clockwise. One is eaten, and the other one's rolled down a bank on May the 10th at the Wap Festival, where both wooden and the real cheese are rolled down the hills to compete for the longest, straightest run. On the 8th of May in Helston, Cornwall, the town is decked with flowers and garlands for Furry Day. At 7 a.m, everyone wears either top hats and morning suits or formal summer dresses. A dance is performed to the local tune, which you will possibly know as the Floral Dance. That chap on the wireless, Terry Wogan, had some small success with it, I believe. The 13th is the day after Old May Day, and at Abbotsbury near Weymouth, they still hold their Garland Day. Originally, this was to bless the boats, although there's no fishing industry there now. Large woven garlands are paraded through the streets and left at the War Memorial. At the day's end, a garland is sometimes thrown into the sea. In mid-May, self-appointed cunning folk and wizards would hold their curative toad fairs, where a freshly decapitated toad was dropped down your vest, and if there was any adverse reaction, well, you are probably doomed. On the 18th day of May, at Newbiggin-by-the-Sea in Northumberland, there is the beating of the bounds, with a walk around the town to confirm the boundaries. On May the 20th, the ancient Scorton Silver Arrow Tournament takes place in Yorkshire. This claims to be the world's oldest recorded sporting event, dating back to 1673. Now, there's still time to enter if ye be a gentleman archer, aged no less than 21 years, and shoot the longbow, recurve, or other traditional bow. This year's tournament will be the 298th recorded annual meeting in the tournament's 334-year history. And that also marks the 750th anniversary of the Scorton Village Feast. The tournament itself is named after the village of Scorton, where the first archery tournament was held in 1673, and a silver arrow was awarded to the winner, who becomes captain of the arrow for that year. However, although originating from and named after the village, this will only be the 14th time that the roving competition has actually taken place there, the last time being in 1989. The Athole Gathering and Parade takes place on the last Saturday in May at Tayside. It's headed by the last private army in Europe, the Athole Highlanders. May the 29th is a traditional Oak Apple Day, with the Oak Apple Walk in Fownhope near Hereford. In Castleton in Derby, there are white-clad dancing girls, garlands, and a Stuart-dressed garland king and consort leading a procession. During the procession, the king is covered by a decorated Jack in the Green-style garlanded frame. There is then dancing around the maypole and other festivity. A similar festival takes place at Arbor Tree Day in Aston-on-Clun in Ludlow, with a decorated poplar tree and much Morris dancing. The Whitsun Holiday comes towards the end of May. There is well dressing at places like Endon, Staffordshire, and there's a pole fair at Corby every 20 years. Whitsuntide Monday is also a time of cheese rolling down hills, a practice often suppressed now due to the level of injury. However, at Brockworth, Gloucestershire, it still takes place at Cooper's Hill, and it used to take place at the Uffington Chalk White Horse. At Charing in Kent, following a service, their festival takes place with hoodening, that's animal guising with a hobby horse, rather like May Day, and Morris dancing. Whitsuntide Friday sees many walks and brass band festivals where there used to be May Ales, which were much more rowdy affairs. And at the end of May is Corpus Christi, and there are many revived miracle plays performed in places including York, Wakefield and Chester. At the end of Whitsuntide Week, Chipping Camden in Gloucestershire holds its Olympic Games, which predate the modern Olympics. But look, that's taking us into June, so let's save that until next month, when once again I'll be sharing with you some of the secrets of the folk year. And until then, this is your Uncle Baba saying, fare thee well.
Thanks for that, Baba.
And now it's time for listener feedback. Yeah, we've had loads of emails this month. Thanks for those. People writing to us at contact@folkcast.co.uk. And here's the first.
This is from someone called Alan Bailey, who says, "Hi, just wanted to let you know how much I enjoyed listening to your interview with Ralph McTell. I've been a big fan of his since about 1969 and have been to many of his concerts around the UK over the years. I have most of his records and books, including the rare unreleased American Paramount Unfinished album, which I got him to autograph. The last time I saw him perform, I didn't have to travel far. He was at the Assembly Rooms in Ludlow, Shropshire, which is where I live. I look forward to hearing future podcasts. Regards, Alan."
That's great. We've got another one here about Ralph McTell. This one comes from Leighton Thomas, who says, "Hi, gentlemen. Wonderful shows. Saw Folkcast highlighted on the Talkawhile website. So hi to everyone on Talkawhile. I must admit, I've only popped in recently to listen to the Ralph McTell interview, but I've now downloaded all the shows in their entirety, and I'm listening to them on my iPod on the way to and from work. That's the way to do it. I'm new to Show of Hands, and I'm looking forward to the next podcast. So I hope you like what you hear." That's from Leighton.
Here we have an email from Jack Worth in Sussex, which reads, "Dear Folkcast, I was encouraged to read the comments in podcast 004 about traditional music. I'm a Morris dancer and love traditional music from those young bands mentioned, such as Bellowhead and Blazing Fiddles, as well as those not mentioned, like Dr. Faustus and the English Acoustic Collective, who I saw last week on their national tour with Morris Offspring, a young side of talented dancers imbued with tradition, yet taking it places you wouldn't imagine. I'd love you to play more, especially as it is so up-and-coming and important in folk nowadays. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Jack W., who's actually 18.
80? I thought you had to be an old codger to listen to Morris music. Is that not true?
Well, I think the rules are changing somewhat.
Well, you've done a bit with Morris, so you like the tunes and
I like the tunes, I play them. I also noticed that the age range is incredibly varied.
Absolutely, yeah, and I love Morris music. It's usually accompanied by drinking real ale stood outside pubs, so I'm all for that.
Now you're talking.
It's the only way to do it. Well, hopefully Jackson enjoyed some of the more traditional music that we've played in the current edition of Folkcast. And speaking of Morris, I will go to the email that comes from John Mayer, who hails from Bishopston near Bristol. And John runs his own website, which is called www.mainlymorrisdancing.org.uk, which is, as you might guess, all about Morris dancing. He writes, "Folk music podcasts seem to be rather thin on the ground at present, so chancing on yours via the iTunes directory was a pleasant surprise." Well, thank goodness it was a pleasant surprise. "Since I have a .Mac account, I wanted to try out the technicalities of podcasting, and the result is not really a podcast, but a Rave from the Grave cast. The recording was made by Paul Woods back in June 1983 in a session at the Bristol Folk Tradition in the Nova Scotia." That's an area of Bristol, not in Nova Scotia. "I dance with Bristol Morris men, so an old recording was a good opportunity to test this and to share the entertainment with some old Morris lags." And he then gives a long address for finding his podcast, which is actually a video cast where you can see the side dancing way back in June 1983 and hear the music's fantastic. He says, "This is a crude video of Bristol Morris men on the site, taken with a Canon A70, which I hope is a is a camera and not some sort of firearm. Again, it's to see how easy it was to publish. So there are links on our show notes site to get to John's site, and then you can follow that and see his Morris men dancing way back in the mists of time in 1983. He also writes, "I put a link to Folkcast onto my Morris website, which I started in 1994, which I didn't know the internet existed in 1994. Mm. So it has changed a bit since then. Well, glad you're enjoying things, John, and you keep up the good work as well."
Was that a picture of crude Morris men?
Crude, aren't they all?
How about this one? It says, "Thanks for another excellent programme. Excellent interview with Ralph, with superb musical clips. reminded me of the late 60s in Hull, when on several occasions I saw Ralph with Mike Cooper and local Hull lad, Michael Chapman.
Mm.
I know Michael.
Mm.
The latter is worth a revisit. Seen him recently and still producing good music. He deserves a wider airing. How about it? Cheers, Graham.
Well, how about it indeed? I think we'll track Mike down because he's... well, you know him.
I know where he lives.
Well, it should be easy to track down then. Let's do that. We'll get Mike on the show, hopefully, at some point in the future. And finally, we have had an email from Sophie Mulford, who says, "My name's Sophie, and I'm 16. Well, that interested Ken straight away. She says, "I'm from the Forest of..." She says, "I'm from the Forest of Dean, which is in Gloucestershire, and I love the show, and I was wondering if you could interview Maddie Pryor, or play some of her music, or Steely Span's music." Well, Sophie, much as I fight against it, we're very much likely to get Steely Span's music on the show, because, well, Ken hits me if we don't play it. I'm not being serious, of course. I love Steely Span's music. Put that guitar down, Ken. So, yes, I'm sure Maddie's going to be on the radar as well. So, Michael Chapman, Maddie Pryor, coming up, if they agree.
Very soon, yeah. I think.
Thanks for those. And remember, drop us a line to contact@folkcast.co.uk.
And now, some driving instructions. Joe O'Connor is going to exercise his melodeon for a set of tunes he calls Leaving Hexham, a small Northumbrian town up near the English-Scottish border. Joe's from Cumbria, so there's a good chance he'd want to leave Hexham and head for the Cumberland Gap. And to play him on his way, we've got American multi-instrumentalist Thomas Bailey with a stirring piece of Americana by that very same name. Take it away, gentlemen. Thank you.
sober and grumble and get. Pap walked here from the Cumberland Gap. I'm going back to the Cumberland Gap to see my ma and my grandpap.
Before anybody writes in, yes, we know that the Cumberland Gap is in America, really. And now, an interview with Phil Beer and Steve Knightley, otherwise known as Show of Hands. Well, when I say interview, it's more of a question and answer session. We really did speak to the guys live and in person via the miracle of Skype, the internet telephone thingy. The trouble is, when we came to play back the recording, it sounded like this.
No, I've got five children. Steve's one. Our tour manager, Chris, is another. Miranda, our bass player, is another. Kevin, as our reckless CD shop, is another. They're all children. it's enough.
Undeterred, but up against the clock, because both Show of Hands and Ken are, as you listen, out on the road earning a living by playing music to adoring fans, we decided to ask Show of Hands to record their answers once again. Then, by stitching everything together, we present the following, the first ever Frankenstein's Monster interview. Buckle up, this could be a bumpy ride. I understand, Steve, that you're a new dad again, or a dad again. How does that inform you as a musician? I mean, do you write songs about being a dad and changing nappies and midnight feeds and all that?
Well, having three kids under five certainly means you've got to go out and earn some money. But apart from that, I sort of hate all that mawkish sentimentality that some people do, you know, celebrating their fertility on stage and writing lullabies. And even I've heard about people dragging the offspring up. I mean, I think if I ever got to that point, you'd probably shoot me, wouldn't you, Phil?
It could be arranged, yeah. You're poisoning, you know.
I've seen you as a duo, and I've seen you as a trio, and I've seen you with a band, I think. So what's happening on the next tour? What manifestation are you going out as?
We have one survivor from the big lineup from 2 years ago. We did summer festivals with a whole band lineup. Miranda, our bass player, has stayed the course. She's with us well over two-thirds of the time at the moment. And the double bass is a perfect instrument to complement what we do. And she's a great singer, so obviously we're benefiting from having the three-part harmonies and everything. She's a great asset, Miranda, and we're delighted that she's continuing to work with us for the moment.
What not a lot of people remember or realise is that we always, in the early days, were going to be a band. The name Show of Hands was the idea of making it a collaborative group of musicians. And after a few years, it was an unpopular idea with most of our followers. They liked the idea of the duo. But Miranda has been surprisingly, I mean, I don't say that we're surprised, but there's been very little resistance to the idea of the extra person on stage. I think people realise that the music is enhanced by the bottom end and the extra harmony. And who knows, it may be possible to add some light percussion into all that, into the mix for the future, especially as the album contains rather more sort of on the way of percussion and programming and all that sort of thing. So yeah, watch this space.
Let's talk about the new single that's coming out and ask why you've gone back into the singles market now. Is it 10 years since the last one?
Well, yeah, we had a good old go at it about 10 years ago. I think the kind of whole process has changed now. I mean, the singles thing is just doesn't function in the way that it used to. Now, people tend to put out white labels and circulate them to see if there'll be a glimmer of interest. So if everyone else from major companies does it, why not us, you know?
Yeah, technology's moved in our favour, hasn't it, with downloads. And you don't... The corrupt system that used to exist between record companies, free versions of stuff, free albums, and a selected but secretly known numbers of record shops, that's, in a sense, been made redundant. And was it recently there was the first ever download-only number one? Hmm. So it's a more of an even cricket pitch.
Playing field,
but yeah. I don't expect it to last. I imagine that they're cooking up ways of making it impossible quite soon.
I mean, the entire process of all the internet related things has, as we say, created this level playing field for people, that so many small people can get stuff out there that people can then find, download, assimilate and enjoy.
Tell us about Witness, Steve, because it's an interesting song, all about an interesting cult, I believe.
Yeah, well, to be honest, that is, in a sense, the party line. It's just really about groups of people that are driven by faith and conviction. And I was trying to get into the mindset of somebody who believes firmly in some event or some person, but has that passion and slight instability all combined. I think it's quite an interesting perspective. And one of the things about the record is that I'm trying to be lots of different narrators in the songs, the diver, the young guy by the seaside town, and Witness. It's sort of driven by that sort of perspective. So whilst informed by some people that we've met on the road who were trying to recruit various members of our entourage, it really is about more than that, and it just encompasses, you know, faith generally.
Got land, we grow food, we bake bread and fell wood. Spring lands in the fields, sweet water in our hills. And at sunrise each day, we connect, we pray. We've got faith to spare, but we bond, we share. Jackie taught, Adam drove a tank, Ellie travelled and I drank. John was a farmer, Ben flew. We broke ranks but we grew. So sit down, stop running, he's near, he's coming.
We'll be back for more from Show of Hands soon, but first, more of the old new mix. The Cuckoo is a really well-known song that's been covered a million times, but never has it sounded like this. Mixing the ancient words and music as performed by Charlotte Grieg and Julian Heyman with the weird soundscapes of Johnny Brown. The guitars and accordion are merged with field recordings, electronics, atmospheric noises and psychedelic electric guitar to create a really modern take on an old standard.
The cuckoo's a pretty bird. She sings as she flies. She brings us glad tidings. She tells us no lies. She sucks the little bird's eggs to keep her voice clear. And when she sings cuckoo, the summer draws near. As I was a-walking by the side of a bush, I heard two birds whistling, the blackbird and the thrush. When I asked them the reason, so merry they be, the answer they told me, we are single and we are free.
Charlotte Grieg and Julian Heyman there with their new version of The Cuckoo. And if you like the more traditional side of folk, we'd love to hear what you think of this more modern radical take. Is this a new folk rock? Or is it just a load of rubbish? If you think so, let us know at contact@folkcast.co.uk. And you can download that song and two more by the band for free. Just follow the link from our show notes to find out how. And now, back to Phil Beer and Steve Knightley, Show of Hands.
Hi, this is Ken here. How you doing, all right?
Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Technical questions, right? You know, you mentioned your studio. Is this where you've recorded Witness?
Yes, we've used our own studio to do the last couple of albums, but up for this one, what we basically did was for the first time, we demoed up the entire album at Riverside with our own resources so that our producers could take the songs away as templates and work on them. So this time round, yeah, we did about a week's work, recorded versions of all the songs, got them up to scratch, up to tempo, all the rest of it, and then basically we took the guys did all the percussion work, all the basic pre-programming and all the basic pre-production. We took it up to a much bigger, a very nice studio, in fact, also in Devon, up at Colleton, which is owned by Martin Barr and Jethro Tull. And that's called the Press House, and that's where we did the bulk of the recording. It's a very nice environment.
In fact, it was a surprisingly thorough process. You know, we had toured some of the songs. We recorded them to a basic tempo, so we agreed what the tempo should be. And always the consideration for that tempo was what delivers the lyrics, you know. Roots, for example, we slowed down quite a lot from the live version just because Simon kept saying, I can't hear that line. And as Phil says, the guys took that away, even programming some natural speeding up that we were doing on a song like Witness. When we did that acoustically, Mass just liked the idea that it gathered momentum. So boffins amongst you might notice that it goes up, I don't know, maybe 1% on the last third, which was built in. So yeah, it was a very interesting and, for us, quite an enlightening process to see production at that level.
What kind of system do you record on?
Okay, in Riverside, use AW workstations, Yamaha gear, but I'm gradually sort of moving sideways little bit by little bit to Cubase at the moment. I'm hoping next year to go to Pro Tools, which would be nice. But the album, ultimately, was all recorded in Logic Pro 7 on Mac, and then was all subsequently taken to another studio, Britannia Row, which is the Afro Celt's own mixing studio.
Their domain.
Their domain, as it were, where it was mixed on two Macs. we had an awful lot of audio tracks this time. I've never done a recording session where there's so many audio tracks flying around. I think it counted 86 tracks on one of the songs. And that's all linked through a Sony digital desk system as the hub to hold the whole thing together. And, of course, all their fantastic outboard gear and, of course, their expertise and resources. So, yeah, basically, it moved through Yamaha AW format into Logic 7 format and hopefully seamlessly, and was a good, very good way of doing things. But, yeah, I think ultimately, as I get more sort of au fait with computer recording in general, Pro Tools, for me, probably has to be the way to go, ultimately.
What about the instruments you play? How many instruments are you going to be taking on the road with you?
Well, currently I'm going to be taking two guitars, one standard tuning, one with a bit of extra tuning in, because I hate all that time wasting, the pace you can lose at a concert when you're tuning. So two guitars. I've got a cello mandolin, GDAD, the standard one I've been playing for years, but now I've also got a deep-tuned cello mandolin that starts down at a low D, for stuff like Dive and The Undertow and All I Ever Lost. For some reason, I'm playing the harmonica on one song, I'm playing concertina for half of one song, and I'm playing a bit of bass fiddle on one song as well. So there's a nice melange of acoustic instruments, most of them made by our friend Mr. David Oddie, and that takes care of me. And I don't know what you've got, Phil. The trumpet, bagpipe.
What was on stage last time I looked? Yeah, fiddle, standard fiddle, old German Saxon fiddle with a Bacchus Berry bridge.
There's many a good tune, by the way.
Aha, indeed.
Played on, yeah.
And so on, yeah. My oldest, I've just gone back to the oldest Oddie guitar, the Cutaway Electric Acoustic, which still seems to sound best when playing slide. I'm currently using a Spanish Cutaway, also by David Oddie. And then one of our newer Mando cellos, which is a very thinly made one, which sounds extremely nice. And I've also just gone back to the Oddie mandolin, which is a direct copy of my Gibson A model in the first place. So yeah, at the moment, apart from the fiddle, it's all Oddie instruments. The bass violin Steve mentions is a great instrument made by Sonic Violins. In fact, it's a fully acoustic instrument, but with the octave down strings and the Sonic sound system built into it. It's a very good instrument.
And of course, when you're not out together, you've got your own independent careers. Phil, you've got your own band. Steve, you've got your own projects as well. How does that all work and fit around each other?
Yeah, we also have a telephone calling service, which you've just been speaking to there. It tends to reinforce what we do. People make mistakes, though. They think that you can divide a group up and still appeal to the same number. You know, if Phil and I were to do solo shows, we'd only tend to draw half of a Shirvan's audience. And even if we were to add, you know, if I was to play with Martin Joseph, we're only going to get half of a Martin Joseph audience as well. So you can never add audience to audience to audience. But the great thing, I've worked with Seth Lakeman lately and Jenna, is it does give you extra ideas for music. I've got about three or four songs from watching Seth whack his tenor guitar and a certain attitude for playing. So as long as you don't do what a lot of the tunes players do, which is sort of corrupt the essential breadwinning identity. You know, you have a thing that has got concert profile. You have to be careful to keep that going and not do too many collaborations of an equal level. As long as it's perceived as being supporting, I think it actually is, it just enhances what you do.
I agree with him, basically, yeah. Also, it has to be said that this year there is very little room for doing anything else. I mean, I've done one or two of the Feast of Fiddles tour this year, which is something I would normally do every year. But really, to be honest, with all the work we've done on the album and all the shows that we're now currently embarking on, there really isn't time for anything else. I think I did one charity gig with our old friend Mike Silver. Apart from the Feast of Fiddles gigs, that's the only thing I've done this year.
Yeah, this year is very much promoting the album, so it's going to be show of hands. We've got the Albert Hall next year, so there'll be some lead up to that. Then we're doing a couple of solo projects after the Albert Hall, and hopefully in that autumn should be some major concerts again. So, yeah, the diary's pretty full at the end of the day.
Now, you mentioned, Steve, Seth Lakeman a couple of times, and he's really shot to prominence since the Mercury Prize nomination. But you obviously knew him before then, and you very cannily got him in to record on the new album. How did you come across Seth?
We've actually known the Lakeman family since the boys were in their teens, really, because we used to play at the folk club, Who'd Have Thought It, where his dad was a resident. So we remember these young lads before the big Equation record deal. But we hitched up with Seth really about 4 years ago at Rudolstadt. He was there playing with his brother and Cara Dillon. And I had no idea that he was a writer at that time. He just produced his first album. And then about a year later, he sent me Kitty J. And I just thought, this guy's got a lot of ingredients. He ticks a lot of mainstream crossover boxes. But no one else seemed to think that. The folk world certainly didn't think so. He didn't have any gigs. He was down to his last gallon of petrol. And I thought it'd be nice to tour with him and young Jenna from North Devon. So we did a collaborative trio for about 20 dates, made an album. And then all of a sudden came this Mercury Prize nomination. And then, of course, the world is claiming they spotted it all along. I think he's destined for great things. But, he's a good young guy. We get on very well with him. And hopefully he will remain unchanged.
Well, enough about Seth Lakeman. Let's talk about Show of Hands again. The last album, Country Life, it was very political and concentrated on the plight of people living in the country. And nothing has much changed in the years since that came out. So is that political influence and emphasis still there in the new album?
The only song that's really got, I think, that same sort of declamatory edge is Roots, really. And it's not so much about housing and unemployment, it's more about English identity. That's the only one, the only sort of tub thumper.
And a minister said his vision of hell is three folk singers in a pub near Wells. Well, I've got a vision of urban sprawl. It's pubs where no one ever sings at all, and everyone stares at a great big screen. Overpaid soccer stars, prancing teams, Australian soap, American rap, history, English, baseball caps. And we learn to be ashamed before we walk of the way we look and the way we talk. Without our stories or our songs, how will we know where we come from? I've lost St. George in the Union Jack. That's my flag too, and I want it back. Seed, bud, flower, fruit, never gonna grow without their roots. Branch, stem, shoot.
to be honest, apart from Country Life, there wasn't anything else on that record that was really what might be loosely termed a protest song. There was a song called Crooked Man that we released as a download on our own website a year or so ago, which was an abstract anti-war song, I suppose. But no, it's just a series of stories, and if people want to infer conclusions from the stories, that's sort of up to them, really. Songs like Undertow, I suppose, could be said about seaside deprivation, but it's not a very good headline.
I'm curious about songwriting, primarily, I suppose, Steve, you write most of the material, yeah?
I suppose I write about 80%. We always do a cover or two, and I suppose in maybe three or four traditional folk songs during a night.
Is writing something you have to really discipline yourself to do, or is it something that happens quite spontaneously?
Yeah, I actually have to put aside time. You know, you have the deadline of an album coming up, and you just know you need at least 10 songs, and you only got six. On this album, we toured about seven of them, and three of them sort of evolved in the studio. And it's a question really of putting aside time, but particularly for lyrics. The music sort of can happen fairly naturally and in all sorts of places and ways. But lyrics, you just can't busk in the same way. You can't just jam it. You have to really play them to people, and that's how they evolve. You play them to people, and then you rewrite and you cut and paste. And I do think that the idea of using a laptop is fantastic when you can move stuff around and get ideas from your own choices, you know, of moving text. And so, yes, in answer to your question, it is a slog.
What do you listen to when you're not writing your own music and playing your own music? What kind of things are either on your iPod or on your CD changer?
I suppose current listening. Well, listening in the last 2 days, I just resurrected two old albums, Midnight Oil, Diesel and Dust, which I particularly like. I suppose a very political album for an Australian rock and roll band. And then following on the sort of rock line, the Hooters, from the good old Hooters from Philadelphia, I just dug out Hooterization. So for the next couple of days, it's fairly rocky listening.
You accumulate stuff, don't you? I mean, we are great believers in spreading the word by making burns of other CDs. People do it for our stuff, and it brings in the audience, and it spreads the word. So someone gave me an Evanescence album, a fairly standard heavy rock, and I love it. I play it at maximum volume in the car, and I've now, obviously, I went out and bought the album. I've got Springsteen, the recent live show, so it tends to be thumpy rock for me. I don't listen to a lot of singer-songwriters. I find a lot of the emotional landscape stuff a bit dreary. So, yeah, I tend to go for quality rock. Dare I say, could we make compilations? I've got an iPod, but I can't seem to get the random shuffle thing to work, so it sometimes throws up the weirdest stuff. But or else I listen to the mainstream radio, not a lot of Radio 2. I tend to listen to the sport or to the you know, the chat show, the talk radio. So yeah, we don't. I mean, people imagine that we immerse ourselves in other people's music a lot, and it's surprising how little I do. You also have to be very, very wary that you don't have such strong musical heroes in your own genre that you're in their shadow or you sound like them all the time. So.
Yes, that's something you've got to be careful of. Also, I mean, recently I've been revisiting the Buena Vista Social Club stuff because I was fascinated by the loud to the extent that I've actually had one built and I'm learning to play it. In fact, I've just contributed to someone else's album, the first ever session playing the loud. It's a most beautiful instrument, but it's going to take me a long time to get myself around it. But I've just got a whole bunch of Cuban stuff, Silvio Rodriguez and Frank Delgado, which I'm just about to put on and listen to because someone said to me these were, you know, very important reference points for Cuban music. So I'm about to stick them on with interest, you know. The other thing I do is, of course, I'm a random buyer. If I go into a record shop for something, I always come out with a random buy. You know, just anything that jumps out at me, and I've come across some great stuff that way. Equally, I've come across an awful lot of rubbish, but it's so much fun when you just pick something off the rack and go, I'll give that a go.
People are going to see you all around the country for, well, the rest of the year, I think, isn't it? You've got dates in the diary going right through until...
Forever, isn't it? I mean, it's yes, the dates do go through. As I say, the rest of the year, festival season, autumn tour, Albert Hall preamble stuff, Albert Hall solo stuff, summer festivals, autumn tour, sleep.
Perchance to Dream. Yes.
Now we're busy enough, and yeah, I mean, this is what we do, isn't it? So we feed ourselves. It's how we put petrol in the cars by making music, and the only dilemma would be is if we sell 250,000 copies of Witness, and we got so much money that we don't need to go anywhere. Would we still go anywhere?
Mm. Yes, that's an interesting one. I don't know. I've produced a couple of albums which are coming out fairly shortly. Young fiddle singer called Jackie Oates, who's very very good, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm currently working on some tracks for Midland singer-songwriter John Richards' album as well. So there's loads of studio stuff going on.
Loads of stuff, yeah.
Loads of stuff.
Good to chat to you.
Take it easy.
Thanks, chaps. You can find full details of their tour dates and the music played on the show notes on our website, www.folkcast.co.uk. And speaking of tour dates, don't forget that Steel Eye Span are also on the road as we speak. And, of course, you can find their dates via our website also. And now, to wind up the show, a little story from our friend Ian at Woven Wheat Whispers, who writes of the next artist. You cannot believe how pleased I am to welcome Derek Brimstone to Woven Wheat Whispers. Many years ago, when I first discovered the wealth of talent in British folk music, a friend made me a compilation cassette, remember those, of guitarists he thought worthy of my attention. Alongside a few names I knew, Jansch, Giltrap, McTell, etc., were a slew of other names from the late 60s and early 70s. Alongside other players then unknown to me were Steve Tilston, Michael Chapman, Dave Peacock, and the magnificently surnamed Derek Brimstone. Maybe it was his unusual name that first drew me in, or possibly it was the similarly exotically titled Suki. But either way, I had to find out more. My limited teenage funds were frittered in local record shops. Gradually, I acquired a pair of Derek's LPs on the Rubber label, although I grew to love them, neither contained the elusive instrumental track from the now worn and stretched C90. Many years later, I discovered the track to be on his debut album, Fire and Brimstone, released in 1968 on the Fontana label. Months of scouring record fairs and small ads in collector's magazines finally secured me a copy, and I can still recall the moment I eventually got to play the LP. Was I going to be disappointed after all these years? Not in the slightest. And 20 years later, it's that album I still return to with regularity. In 2005, Derek was able to secure the rights to his debut album, and it has since been issued on CD in Japan. After badgering Derek for a while by email, Woven Wheat Whispers has been able to exclusively offer this album as an exclusive download. I honestly hope that you will enjoy this gentle and innocent charms of this debut as much as I do. So here's your chance, folks. Line up the C90s and listen to Suki. That's us done for another month on Folkcast, so we'll see you in June, and until then, this is Phil.
And this is Ken.
Saying, y'all come back now.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah, things have definitely changed.
Yep. Yes.